Make plans to be with us again next Sunday. We're going to have a special emphasis. We're going to focus on evangelism and visitation. It's our visitation reorganization Sunday, but it's also a Sunday we're going to focus on reviving our love for the lost and reviving evangelism. Jerry Jenkins is going to be here for Sunday morning service, a combined Bible class, Sunday night service. He'll also speak at our Visitation Reorganization Center, which will take place after services. Jerry, you may know his son Dale, who preaches down the road at Spring Meadows. And Jerry's one of the foremost authorities in the Brotherhood on the subject of evangelism. I'm very excited that he could work us in his schedule to be here with us next Sunday. And I hope that you'll make plans to come and share with us in that. If you would open your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 31. One of our elders, I'll try not to mention his name, asked me this morning, said, "How are you going to talk about mothers from Joshua?" I said, "I looked really hard, but didn't exactly know how it fit. We might have, but as I thought about what we might talk about that's very appropriate, I couldn't think of anything any better than Proverbs chapter 31. As I thought about it, I thought about, unfortunately, it is often a passage that we study at the end of someone's life. And we don't spend enough time thinking about it, studying it, and talking about it at the beginning or in the middle. At a time when a person can be honored and encouraged for striving with all of their might to live this life. In 1905, at the Premier Mine in South Africa, they discovered the largest diamond found to this date. It was over 3,000 carats. Now, it's been interesting. We've had some of our young ladies in the congregation who've become engaged lately, and you know, and they walk around. I kid them that they have to have a prop to hold their arms up so everybody can see their engagement ring. Can you imagine a diamond 3,000 plus carats? I promise you, well, I shouldn't promise this, but I think there's a really good chance if the ring you give to her has a 3,000 carat diamond on it, she just might say yes. But as you think about a diamond of that size, we're talking about this morning something that is even more valuable, something that is even more wonderful, incredible, and beautiful: a virtuous woman or wife. As we focus on Proverbs chapter 31 today, I want to use the letter B as our memory glue and just focus for a few moments in two brief areas. I want us to first look at a little bit of the background of this poem, and then I want us to look at the beauty that is described in this poem. The background, and then the beauty. As we do so, when we think about this, I want us to begin by looking at the passage. Now, as we look at it, we're going to focus on verses 10 down through verse 31. So if you would, join with me reading in Proverbs chapter 31. "An excellent wife who can find? Her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and she will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She is like merchant ships which bring her food from afar. She rises also while it is still night and gives food to her husband and portions to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and in teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. We'll stop there for now. We'll come back in a few moments and look at the last few verses of this particular passage. But as you think about that particular poem, I want us to talk for just a moment about the background of that poem. First of all, who wrote it? Well, it's really hard to know. If you'll notice at the beginning of this particular chapter, in verse 1 of chapter 31, it says, "The words of King Lemuel, the oracle which his mother taught him." It may be that the same one who authored those first 9 verses, or at least verse 2 down through 9 of chapter 31 of Proverbs, may be the same one who authored this particular poem. The text does not state that. It just flows from one into the other. So that is a possibility. We don't know who this king is. I know of no evidence that has been able to identify who he was or even where it was that he ruled. Some believe that basically that name is a pen name for Solomon, and that it's actually Solomon who authored that first poem that is found in this chapter in verses 2 down through verse 9. So it's just a pen name, which is of interest if that is the case, because if it is the case, then basically what he's doing is he's passing on advice that was given to him by his mother Bathsheba, which is also of interest in light of some of the comments made in it about being careful about women in your life as king, because if you will remember, she was guilty of committing adultery with David when David was king and brought great harm to the kingdom. If, in fact, she was the mother involved here, and that this is a pen name for Solomon, as she is describing, at least in that first portion of the poem, what he needs to be careful about, she spoke from firsthand experience, for she herself had played a role in harming the king and the kingdom by making a poor choice and doing what was wrong. But we really don't know that. And so this may just be an anonymous author. It does fit perfectly with what lies before it. And you have an interesting contrast that is described here. Because if you look, for example, in verse 3 of chapter 31, in this first poem that is passed down from a queen mother to her son who is now the king, notice what it says. "Do not give your strength to a woman or your ways to that which destroys kings." In other words, he says, basically, be careful about the women in your life and make sure that there are not those in your life who would lead you away from your responsibilities as king and lead you away from your responsibilities to the Lord. And then you take that and then you look in chapter 31, verses 10 and following, and you see a contrast. Instead of looking for this kind of woman, he says, look for this kind of woman. You also have here potentially, first of all, you have an acrostic arrangement that takes place here. And in that acrostic, basically what they would do, you can see an example of this in Psalm 119. They would start each phrase or line of a poem with a different letter in the Hebrew alphabet. So you can imagine if we were doing a poem today and the first line would start with A and the second line would start with B and C and D and so forth all the way through the poem. They often did this in the Hebrew culture with the Hebrew language, and they would write poems, and we have some of those in Psalms that would work that way. So that's what this does. We kind of miss that when we're looking at it in English, but it is done that particular way. You also have a chiasmus here. And basically, you might think of it as like a half of an X. But I'll pull up here just a picture on the screen I think you have that shows a potential layout for this, at least as one author has laid it out. And generally, in a chiasmus arrangement, the first and last lines parallel, the second and next to last lines parallel, the third and third to last lines parallel, and so forth all the way through the poem, and it kind of works its way to a center point. And while as I looked at this, there were a few of those that seemed reaches to me, I could see most of the parallels and most of the arrangements as you work through it. And it's interesting, first of all, explain some things, because I don't know about you, as I'm reading through it, There are times when it is repetitive, where it'll say something early, and then you'll move on later in the poem, and it'll say basically the same thing again in a little bit different wording. And so, but when I begin to look at this arrangement, I realize the reason he's doing that is he's paralleling it. He talks about it early, and then he's going to talk about it late, so the lines parallel as you walk through the poem. And for example, he's going to talk about wisdom. Earlier, he's going to talk about taking care of the poor, which was seen as a trademark of those who were truly wise. There were two major characteristics of the wise person, and one of them was caring for those who were needy. And so you can look at that and kind of see that. But here's what's interesting to me. That if that's going on in this poem, first of all, it speaks to the incredible ability of the person who wrote the poem. To make it a chiasmus arrangement and to make it an acrostic all together in the same poem is not an easy thing to do. This is an excellent poet. But also, what is of interest is, what is at the point? What is at the middle? You've got all these parallels working down to a point, and you'll notice on the screen, in the middle, you have emphasis on the role of the husband in the community. For example, in verse 23, it says, "Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land." If you go all the way back to chapter 1 of Proverbs, if you look in verse 8, it says, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching." If you read through the book of Proverbs is primarily addressed figuratively to a son. It is wisdom that is passed down to a son from a father or a mother. Remember that at the beginning of Proverbs 31, you have a king giving a little poem about some guidance given to him by his mother, the queen mother. When you take that background into account, then what happens in the way the layout is found in the proverb or the poem of the virtuous woman in Proverbs 31, it all fits together. In other words, in the first poem of chapter 31, he said, "Being careful about the women in your life." In the second poem, the one we're focusing on this morning, he says, "If you want to be able to sit among the wise men of the city, if you want to sit with the elders at the city gate," and you got to remember in the ancient world, the gate of the city, it was the courthouse, it was the marketplace, it was the country club, it was the meeting place of the city where decisions were made, political decisions, judicial decisions were made, bartering and trading was done. It was just an important part of ancient cities. And it's where the wise men would often sit to make decisions about the city and about the people and about the families. And he says, in essence, it seems to me, what he's doing here is he's saying, if you want to be the husband that can sit among the leaders and elders of the city, here is the kind of wife that you're looking for. I think when we begin to see that, it gives us some emphasis. In other words, it's not necessarily written to mothers. It's not necessarily written to the wives. It seems possible that it's written to the men saying, what kind of wife, what kind of woman are you looking for, and what kind of woman do you treasure? Let's talk for a little bit about the beauty, and let's just see some highlights of the beauty described here. I want us to think just about the price. I want us to think about then the practices and then the praise. So we think about the price. Notice there in verse 10, "An excellent wife who can find her worth is far above jewels." Some translations may say far above or more than rubies. It's hard to pinpoint in their language exactly which jewel they're talking about. We know it's a jewel. We're not as clear on which jewel that is. I can't help but think that diamond we talked about, that 3,000 carat diamond that was found in South Africa, was found in 1905. It was purchased in 1907. It's the Cullinan diamond. It was purchased in 1907 and given as a gift to King Edward VII, King of England. And so that's why it's now among the crown jewels of England. We'll talk a little bit more about what it looks like now in a little bit later in this lesson. But I want you to think about, maybe, I hope everybody bought something for their mother. If their mother's still with us, I hope you bought something for your mother today or encouraged your children or helped your children to buy something for their mother today. I mean, can you imagine as a present purchasing a 3,000-carat diamond? It was a birthday present. That is absolutely mind-boggling to me. But if you treasure the person, then the price is inconsequential. And what he's really saying as he begins the poem, he's saying, what do you treasure? Who do you value? Because what we really treasure, we will pay anything for. Now it's interesting, as you go through the book of Proverbs, you're going to find one other place this phrase, excellent wife or virtuous wife or woman, is found. And it's back in chapter 12, I believe, in verse 4, where it talks about a virtuous wife is like a crown to her husband. So earlier in the book, she's described as a crown. Now she's described as the jewel, if you will, in the crown. He's just emphasizing the value. Now, there are only two places in the Bible, other than right here in Proverbs 31:10, where this phrase, virtuous woman, is found. One is 12:4, and the other we'll mention in just a few moments. But he's saying, here's what you should treasure, men. Here's what you should value. Here's what you should be looking for. And then as we focus on what comes next, he describes then the beauty. He describes the beauty of one who walks in wisdom, the beauty of one who walks in the Lord. Now what I've tried to do here is we look at the practices of this person. It's not just practices. It really involves not only what she does, but the kind of person she is, the kind of person she is that influences what she does and how she acts and what the practices are in her life. What I tried to do is kind of follow the practice of the poem, kind of this chiastic arrangement and some parallels that I think might can work to a point. But what he says to begin with is she's trustworthy. Look in verse 11. The heart of her husband trusts in her. In other words, her husband has complete confidence in her. It doesn't matter where she's at, what she's doing, or who she's with. Her husband has absolute confidence that she'll be faithful to him, absolute confidence that she'll carry herself with godliness and grace and dignity, absolute confidence that she will do what is best for her family, that she loves them and will put them and God first. So she is a woman that her husband can completely trust. The second thing is that is emphasized really more or as much as anything throughout this poem is how much she works. Over and over it makes effort, emphasis on how much effort she puts into taking care of her family. It talks about that she stays up late at night. Her lamp doesn't go out, as they used oil lamps to light up the homes. Long after the rest of the family is asleep or early before the rest of the family is up many times, the mother is still working, the virtuous woman or the virtuous wife. Talks about things she does. She works to make sure her family has meals. She not only makes sure that they have the meals and the meals are prepared, but she even plays a role in the planting of that food. It talks about things she does to provide for the family. She works to provide some extra income for the family. She works to help the needy. Just on and on it describes what she does to help others. And I can't help but think of my mother. The many, many late hours. The many times I got up in the morning and Mom was up and going and working and doing things around the house. I think of the times along the way, most of my life, my mother stayed at home, was a stay-at-home mom. But there were times in my life when the family needed a little extra money. And Mom would get a job. And I remember a time, for example, that she got a job selling insurance. I remember another time she got a job working at Fort Knox. My mom had been a civil service worker. She had worked at Brown Engineering in Huntsville back when I was, actually real small before I was born, and then when I was real small. But I remember a period when we moved to Kentucky, on up when I was in junior high or high school, that we needed a little extra money. And so for a year or two, my mom went back to work at Fort Knox based on that experience that she had had when I was really small. So most of my life, She stayed home and took care of us. And many times in those jobs, she worked long enough to get what it was the family needed to have a little extra money, and then she came back home to be able to be there for us when we came in from school. You can think of examples in your own family, in your own lives, of what mothers have done. But if there was ever a word that describes most moms, it would have to be the word work. Also, I think hand in hand that is the idea of selflessness. There is no image here anywhere in this poem of a woman who is self-centered and consumed with herself. It is someone who is others-centered. It is someone whose life is devoted to helping the people around her. You'll find references here to how she views her husband and cares for him and puts him above herself, how she puts her children above herself. You'll find reference in this poem even to how she cares about her servants, because the description here is of a woman who has standing in the community and has some wealth in the community. This is a better than average to do family, if you will. They're able to hire servants and so forth. But she even cares about her servants and makes sure that those workers in her household are taken care of. You'll find also here emphasis on her concern for others and helping those who are in need. A totally selfless person. And I think a centerpiece of that is her helpful attitude of others. And she is devoted to helping somebody else, including helping the poor and helping the needy. Again, remember, the poem depicts her as someone coming from some wealth and means. Her husband is a leader in the city. They have enough income to provide for their servants. But she doesn't hoard that and keep it to her family. But she models benevolence. She models compassion and kindness. The text says that she helps in verse 20. She extends her hand to the poor and she stretches out her hand to the needy. Also, she's described strong. Strong and dignified in how she faces the future. The text literally says she smiles at the future. Moms, to a great extent, set the entire tone of the household. You've heard the expression, if mother's not happy, no one's happy. I would say that if dad's not happy, it doesn't help either. And if the kids aren't happy, that doesn't do any good. Anytime you've got somebody in the house that is upset or mad or angry or sad, it affects the whole family. But a mother who has a positive outlook, a mother who smiles at the future, a mother who carries herself with courage and strength and dignity no matter how tough things get, no matter how tight things are, no matter what struggles they face, a mother with that kind of strength and positive attitude can buoy an entire family and give them the courage to face the future. All families are going to face struggles. We may face struggles to differing degrees, but struggles are going to happen. The key in life to finding happiness and hope is not in what happens to us, but in how we look at what happens to us. We can look at our struggles, we can look at the problems and the potential struggles that lie in the future, and we can frown, we can worry, we can fret, or we can be like the woman described in this poem. With courage, strength, dignity, and trust in God, we smile at the future because we know who controls the future. It is our God. It also says she speaks with wisdom. That when she speaks, she seeks to speak words that are wise, that are good guidance, that are good counsel. Hand in hand with that, it describes her as a teacher, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She is someone that you can listen to. She's someone you can talk to. She's someone who keeps confidences. She's someone that when she gives guidance, she wants it to be the best guidance it can possibly be. She's someone her husband turns to. She's someone her children listen to. You know, many times we misunderstand the concept of leadership. And when we look into places like Ephesians chapter 5, verses 33 and following, or 23 and following, as it talks about roles in the home, and it emphasizes the fact that the husband is the head of the home, Sometimes we have this misguided worldly view of what it means to be a leader. I'm in charge. I make all the decisions. Don't interfere with me. I'll decide what is right for this family and you guys just do it. But that is not the picture of leadership found in the New Testament. In fact, even there in Ephesians chapter 5, as it describes the leadership of the husband, it describes it in terms of the leadership of Jesus, one who was willing to die for the benefit of his family. He lived for the benefit of the family. He died to serve the family. That's what godly leaders do. And you will find that he talked to his apostles. He asked questions of his apostles. In fact, he would talk about in John chapter 15, he says, "You're not my servants or slaves." He says, "You're my friends." He says, "A master doesn't tell his slave what's going on. But I have told you all that's going on and what's going to happen and what I'm about because you are my friend." What I'm trying to say is that the wise husband who is leading a family treasures the wise wife. He values their conversations. He values her insight. He values her input. And while in the end he may have to be the final decision, he makes that decision by treasuring and courting the wisdom of his wife. As you think about the wife as one who shares wisdom and is a teacher, I want you to think about all the things that we know that we were taught by our mother. All the things we couldn't do today. How many of us tied a shoe when we came to services this morning? We couldn't do that, many of us, if it wasn't for a mom. For those of us who made a bed, we probably learned that from mom. If you've ever cooked a meal, you may have learned that from mom. Many of us, when you went out on a date, what you did on that date, some of the things you did were based on what mom said. Now don't do this and don't do that and now open the door for her and pull her a chair and help her to get seated. We learn so many things in life from mom. But I think about learning about God and about Jesus and about those stories of the Bible of the great characters who walked in faith. I learned them from what my mom said, and I learned them from what my mom did, because moms are teachers. We've just briefly hit some of the highlights, but what he's saying is here's where real beauty is found. And if you look at the praise portion at the end of this particular chapter, starting in verse 28, it says, "Her husband will rise up and bless her, her husband also, and he praises her, saying, 'Many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the product of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates.'" This poem is a fitting and appropriate end to the book of Proverbs. If you go back to Proverbs chapter 1, you find that the emphasis all through the book is on wisdom. Remember that just a moment ago we noted that the virtuous woman, the one to be prized and treasured, speaks with wisdom. Now, what is wisdom all about? Is wisdom about knowing the answer to every question? Is wisdom about being able to explain every detail of the universe and how it works? God shows us what true biblical wisdom is in chapter 1. In fact, the word wisdom is found 40 times in the book of Proverbs. And in the book of Proverbs, it is pictured as a woman. And so what's interesting is, as you begin the book describing Proverbs, a woman to be treasured, and you end the book talking about a wife who walks in wisdom, who is also to be treasured. But in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7, it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." The theme of Proverbs and the wisdom literature of the Old Testament is that understanding and wisdom starts with a basic respect for and fear of God. And so when he comes to this description of the virtuous wife at the end of the book, He doesn't say, here's what really makes her beautiful, she works hard. He doesn't say, here's what makes her beautiful, she's a good teacher. He said, let me tell you what really makes a woman beautiful. Does she fear God? I remember somewhere in my high school years, a preacher or someone along the line saying, I wanted in my wife to find someone who would love God more than me. And so when I went to college, that was my mission. That was my own personal little phrase. Find someone who loves God more than me. Because if I can find a woman who would give up me for God, that's the kind of woman I want to spend my life with. And that's the one I think I found. And what he says here, what you need to treasure, what we need to value, and what we need to look for and long for is a wife in our lives who treasures God and fears Him. There's a lot of things I think we can think about from this. For those who are not married and who are thinking about being married someday, whether it's man or woman, what kind of spouse are you looking for? Are you looking for one that's a hard worker, that's selfless, that puts others above himself or herself? Are you looking for one that seeks to teach what is good and kind and wholesome? Or are we just looking for physical things, like physical beauty, or money, or other things that might attract us to somebody else? I think the second thing it challenges those of us who are husbands and wives, and I say husbands as well as wives, I think this challenges us to think about what kind of spouse am I? Do I work hard for my family? Do I put the needs of my family above myself? And most of all, is fearing God and honoring Him the centerpiece of my life? But then do all of those who are here today who have wives and mothers, do we praise them in the gates? Do we take them for granted? Did we do anything for them today on Mother's Day? But I think the person who praises the virtuous wife in the gates doesn't just do it on Mother's Day, but we do it every day. Is it a regular habit and pattern of our life to say, thank you. Thank you for all the sleepless nights. Thank you for all the sacrifices. Thank you for all the pain. Thank you for loving God and wanting me to love God. I think one of the greatest crimes we can commit is to not value, treasure, praise, and thank those who've sacrificed to help us to be who we are. And right at the top of that list ought to be mothers. Would you take out your songbook and turn to the hymn of encouragement? As you look at a poem like this, you might say, does this person really exist? Can you find anybody that does all of this? Well, I want you to understand that it is a poem. It is an ideal. It's not saying that any husband or wife is going to be perfect, but it's saying this is what we might aim at. And it's interesting, there are not lots of descriptions in the Bible talking about mothers. You have in Titus where it tells wives to love their husbands and children. You have Paul comparing his work as a minister to being like that of a mother. But I think here you have probably one of the longest, if not the longest description of what a mom might look like anywhere in the Bible. It's the ideal we live for. But it's interesting, there is one place in the Bible where you have a woman who is described with the same term used in verse 10 of this chapter. One woman who is called a virtuous woman. And that woman is Ruth. She is a woman who left her home, her family, her people, and her gods to travel with her mother-in-law Naomi, because she treasured Naomi and because she treasured Naomi's God. I think Ruth lies as an example for all of us, man or woman, on how to live our lives. I talked a few moments ago about the Cullinan diamond. The largest diamond ever found, 3,000 carats. What's interesting is that after it was given as a present to Edward VII, it was eventually sent to Amsterdam and they began to cut it. In fact, the first attempt to cut it broke the tool. The second attempt, they finally were able to divide it. And eventually it was made into 9 other diamonds, and there are actually several other little bits and pieces that were actually given to the company that I think actually cut it as their payment. But those 9 diamonds are now in the Royal Treasury of England. If you go to the Tower of London and look at the crown jewels, you'll see many of those diamonds there. The largest diamond is in the Royal Scepter, and it's over 530 carats. The second largest, called Cullinan II, is found in one of the crowns. They have several royal crowns, and it's a little over 317 carats. And the others are scattered in other bits and pieces of jewelry. It started out as a treasure in the ground. Then it was taken out and purchased by someone who valued it and given as a gift. And then it was spread out and given to kings and queens and princes and princesses down through the years. To me, that's what a godly woman is. She is a treasure given to us. And if we treasure her and value her and appreciate her, then the beauty, the luster, the diamond that is within her is broken up, and it's handed to a husband, and it's handed to a child, and it's handed to a grandchild. And generation after generation wears the beauty in their lives that comes from a mom they treasured and praised and loved. I want to challenge us as we think about this invitation song to think about what we treasure and who we treasure and who we praise in life. We give our athletes millions of dollars, but forget to buy our mom a Mother's Day card. And I also want us to think about the kind of person we are. Am I giving any diamonds to the people around me? Am I living a beautiful life focused on God? And am I sharing that with others so that God's beauty, as seen through people, can sparkle and glisten in the world? If we can help you in your walk with God, if you would like to become a child of God and express your faith and repentance, confession and baptism, put on Christ and have a beauty like you've never had before, we'd love to share in that this morning. If you're a child of God and you realize that there is a loss of luster in my life because I'm not living the way God wants me to live, then I want to challenge you to make a change. If it needs to be a public change, we'd love to pray with you, hug you, and cry with you, and help you to make that change. Remember, no one responds alone. If you need help, come. We'll come with you as we stand and sing.